And that, of course, was, I think it's a 3 or 4 year old show, which Coral and Rutabaga Rick, as I call him, did some guest hosting for Uncle Dennis, who's usually here on Thursday nights starting at 8 with the Cream to the Dregs. This show, however, that you're listening to now is my show. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's 2 hours of updates on civil rights, or lack thereof, in Santa Cruz and elsewhere around the state, the nation, and sometimes the world, particularly with a focus on homeless civil rights. Tonight, a special focus on the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes homeless people outside, also criminalizes political protesters at night who wish to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I just got a quick call from a guy called Ground Zero Gary Johnson. He didn't choose that name. I stamped it at him. He, however, has been at the center of the recent protests around the right to sleep, which he has simply been asserting the basic right to sleep as he has for several years outside the county courthouse, which has not only been the subject of an absurdly vague and abusive use of a general code section 647E, the so-called lodging law, which was multiply charged against Occupy Santa Cruz people and then charges all mysteriously dropped, but also charged against homeless activists 2 years ago with Peace Camp 2010 and still charged against several homeless activists. Christopher Doyen, Commander X, as he's sometimes known, and he's also, I know him as Curb Hugger Chris, who is one of the most active members of that particular protest, as well as Linda LeMaster, Lighthouse Linda, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, former chair of the City Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, a homeless woman herself at different times, and a mother, and a woman with strong feelings about not just the right to protest, but the right of homeless women to be safe and survive without having to meet the disappear or else standards of the Santa Cruz City Council, Downtown Association, and so forth, which really is that's where the origin of this law is, as well as the Santa Cruz Police Department. The sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is the law that criminalizes homeless people after 11 o'clock at night. If you actually fall asleep standing, sitting, lying, or hanging from a tree, it's a criminal act. If you do so three times and you don't get to court to meet your obligations, which may mean a lot of going to court, then you are faced with all subsequent infractions of any kind, whether it's sitting on the sidewalk or jaywalking or having a sign after dark asking for a dime, become misdemeanors, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. A law is passed by the Coonerty Council with the full advice and consent of Catherine Byers and Don Lane, who are supposed to be the most liberal members of our Santa Cruz City Council. This is something I've repeated endlessly, but it's the background to what's happening in Ashland. Up in Ashland, Oregon, and I'm going to begin by reading from a couple of papers, mainstream papers even. Homeless man protests camping law in Ashland. This is an AP story from May 5th. An Ashland man turned activist says he's willing to get arrested repeatedly to bring attention to what he believes are unfair city laws against camping in public places. So far this week, 23-year-old Keith Haxton, who, by the way, is due to be calling in for an interview, and that'll be interesting, has racked up 3 citations for sleeping on a park bench in the downtown plaza of the tourist and theater town. He's also been charged with interfering with a police officer, the Ashland Daily Tidings reported Friday. City codes prohibit camping on any publicly owned property and sleeping on benches or within doorways between the hours of 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. So it sounds like a similar law. I wonder if it came from Santa Cruz or somewhere else, because the Santa Cruz law was initiated back in 1978 in its current form. It's undergone a few modifications. A few exceptions have been put in that are very difficult and to actually use, and a special privilege status for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which has less than 50, well, it has essentially zero walk-in beds. I suppose they're emergency beds, they claim, at the River Street mini shelter out there at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And there's the Paul Lee Loft, which you get on a waiting list. And there's Family Shelter, where if you're a family, you can get on the waiting list. And there's Page Smith Community House, where if you are in a long-term program. But as far as a walk-in shelter for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, that does not really exist in Santa Cruz anymore. There are some people trying to create it through the Calvary Episcopal Church and the resuscitating the once pathetic and now even more, well, fractional interfaith satellite shelter program, which is a used to be a church program where we could go and about somewhere between 40 and 80 people were served by getting into buses and being bused to a church each night, and then you got up in the morning and left, and we could actually walk into that one without filling out a lot of papers and so forth, no doubt to the dismay of Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz neighbors, and the Santa Cruz City Council, which now wants to regard every homeless person as a potential criminal and demand they go through ID checks and criminal history checks and checks and all kinds of things. That hasn't actually been instituted yet as a formal process, but it's being gleefully seconded by Monica Martinez, the Homeless Lack of Services Center's director, or such is her title. Any case, in Ashland, City Coast prohibit camping on any publicly owned property and sleeping on beaches or within doorways between the hours of 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. Again, that's sleeping, the necessary human function that has to be done by every person every day, really, in order to be healthy, in order to thrive, in order to seek work, in order to engage in a normal human activity. That is made illegal in a lot of cities, just a kind of blithely and without even a second thought. And it's done so in cities that claim a liberal majority or a progressive front, like Santa Cruz, Santa Monica, Santa Barbara, although Santa Barbara is a more conservative community. And it's been overturned by the courts in some cities, large cities, less liberal cities like Los Angeles and San Diego, where the Jones settlement requires police to allow people to sleep at night, and Spencer settlement in San Diego, which has a similar requirement. And even though police have found ways to harass homeless people regardless, the laws are essentially dumped by settlement or by court action and the threat of court action. And there have been similar actions undertaken in Sacramento and in Santa Barbara. And we'll see where those lead. Actually, usually they've led to kind of a half-assed settlements. But my concern is Santa Cruz. And tonight I'm talking to Ashland because I learned, as you are learning from this article, that Ashland's Keith Haxton has decided, as Gary Johnson decided here in Santa Cruz 3 months ago, or actually 2.5 years ago, or even longer, simply one has to sleep, and one has the right to sleep, and it's a complete stupidity and insanity to act otherwise. Although you get the insane counter response, Gary Johnson was sentenced to 2 years in jail, suspended by Judge John Gallagher a month and a half, 2 months ago. He faces an additional 6 months in jail on an appeal case that's coming up. I believe it's on June 14th at 4 o'clock in Department 5. Gary may be calling in to talk about this. And I'm, again, hoping that our Ashland gang is going to call in. They're actually I talked to both Keith Haxton himself and city council member Carol Voisin, I think her name was, a couple days ago. She's very... I didn't actually talk to her. I talked to her machine, and she called me back. And actually, then I did talk to her. I got some information from her. I don't know if I talked to her or not, but I got the information of contacts with an ex-city council member who is out there along with Haxton. Don't know if he's sleeping, but they did a one-night protest at their city council meeting where the city council is proposing two bad laws. One of them is a law that tightens their sleeping ban, and I'll be reading about that. And the other is one that makes it illegal to allows the banning of people from the downtown, something that Santa Cruz does with kind of informal arrangements through the courts, through the district attorney, Bob Lee, and through judges for so-called repeat offenders around, let's say, alcohol abuse concerns, where I actually might have some sympathy for people who are repeat offenders there, in spite of my civil liberties proclivities. But this is being used in a draconian way to go after homeless people generally, and in a much more blatant kind of way, showing you the temper of the times. Again, reading more of the story from Ashland, Keith Axton said he moved to Ashland from Florida working as a teacher's aide in high school and then went to college before he ran out of money and became homeless a year ago, sleeping for a time in his car. Since then, he's become an activist on the issue. His protest is the latest turn in the city's debate over how to treat street people. Recently, business leaders and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival have expressed concern about aggressive panhandlers. I guess they want to kind of, you know, corner the market for themselves on panhandling. And the city council will consider an exclusion zone downtown. The city should provide a shelter for those who need it, amend the anti-camping ordinance, or just strike it down and come up with a different approach to this, the activist Keith Haxton said. Advocates for the homeless say the council hasn't done enough to alleviate the problems, citing rejection of proposals for a day center and for a showering facility, which Santa Cruz has, by the way. Let's give full credit to activists who in the late 80s and early 90s pressured this to be created. Actually, did the way it was created was there were sit-ins and sleep-ins and overnight eight-and-a-half-month protests downtown, which didn't lead, as far as I know, to any appreciable drop in business, though this was right after the earthquake, and it would have been hard to tell, perhaps. Downtown was so devastated anyway. But it did lead to their paranoid determination finally to fund a free meal under Karen Gillette out at the homeless, what is now the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and was then just sort of a vacant lot and a small River Street shelter with 14 beds. And that kind of grew and grew as a consequence of the Downtown Merchants Association's determination to establish a little ghetto area on the outskirts of town where they could kind of herd the homeless. And presumably there was also legal concerns about, you know, branding homeless people with an H on their arm, and, you know, you can't really do that in the modern-day world in quite the same way, unless, of course, you are engaging in... if you get permission from Obama, you can assassinate them. That's the new thing, or indefinitely detain them as terrorists. But that seems to be a lot of energy and effort to go to, and I'm getting a little fanciful here, but I'm really not, considering the kind of climate we're in, which I think impacts how laws are being created and police practices are being accepted that would have been, if not unthinkable, and I don't want to say that, I don't want to give the idea there was a golden age 30 or 40 years ago or 200 years ago, but there is a sense that there should be a continuing expansion and deepening of equality of opportunity and basic rights for all people, regardless of their class, gender, color, religious views, sexual preferences, you name it. They should be treated as human beings and judged by their actions and not by their status, similarly with people who have addiction problems and so forth. And that became a court ruling in the 60s. You don't... drug addiction and alcoholism is a condition. It is not really a choice in the strictest sense. In some sense, certainly it's a choice whether you get out there and get drunk. But just the idea that you can be prosecuted for being a drug addict died in the 60s. Although, of course, the drug war intensified as the mythic menace of marijuana and all these other drugs, when in fact the real drug menaces are the prescription drugs that are killing people, and legalized drugs like alcohol, which we found illegalizing has even worse consequences, or perhaps of a different sort. So the whole idea of throwing money at police departments creates a huge black market and a huge corruption throughout the world and in governments, which you can see back in the 80s with the Reagan regime's guns for drugs support of the Contras in Nicaragua and its Iran deal swaps, and for which Reagan actually should have been impeached, as well as many of its other people, but they were all pardoned one after another under the Elder Bush regime. This kind of stuff continues and deepens and becomes second nature under the Obama regime, which originally, you know, that great hero Obama was going to stop torture and so forth. And we know, of course, that it's been outsourced, intensified, justified, bills in Congress supported that continue it. Also the fact that there are individuals who should have been indicted for torture, not to mention banksters should have been indicted for producing conditions that amount to torture for hundreds of thousands of people across the country who've lost their savings, lost their homes, and yet not a single person has gone to jail. except, of course, the jails are filled with African-American people, people of color, drug war people. I mean, it's the reason you have group, you know, movements like Occupy across the country realize that it does no good to go in and think, vote for this or vote for that particularly. You know, although one should, you know, consider voting on election day for sure, for initiatives particularly, and maybe for this candidate or that, but to actually put any confidence into that system is completely delusional. It's just ridiculous. And people realize that, that our confidence has to be in our mutual support for each other in the community and also in our ability, our willingness to overturn those institutions and sweep that kind of stuff away. And that is yet to happen, of course. But there are those of us who believe that that day must come at some point. So, apparently, in the tinier battles up in Ashland, Keith Haxton is continuing his struggle. And I think I have a part of a taped interview I will play with him if he does not call in, which I suspect may not be happening because perhaps our phone lines aren't working, but I think they are because I got a call earlier. But let's see what's cooking here and continue with the story. Advocates for the homeless say the council hasn't done enough to alleviate the problem, citing rejection of proposals for a day center and for a showering facility. And I mentioned there is that out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. If you're in the good graces of Monica Martinez and her staffs, there's been a lot of staff turnover recently, and I'm still trying to get some information on that. And we'll hear a report from Casey Livingood, who went out there a day before yesterday to do a survey and was essentially denied, told he couldn't do that, although it's like saying, well, you're not allowed to breathe here. You can't ask questions here. And I've also gotten reports from Andrea out there, a disabled woman, that they are threatening people with exclusion if they talk to the media about what's going on at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And again, these are secondhand reports. You can make your own judgment as to how credible they are. You can talk to people out there yourself and come to your own conclusions. But in the meantime, let's continue looking at the people fighting back in Ashland. Council members rejected the shower proposal because of safety and liability concerns and because council members thought such an operation should be run by an experienced organization. This is the same excuse, I think, that was used to, has always been used by people like Rotkin when he's been on the city council, Matthews, and I think that probably Lane and Byers, too, although they're more least initially sympathetic to these kinds of proposals for an organized campground, but they claim, you know, you don't want to allow people to camp by themselves because that would be unhealthy, unhappy, whatever. And indeed, problems develop, but also solutions to those problems develop, as the San Lorenzo campground Occupy Santa Cruz campers found over their two-month camping, where they created their own community in spite of obstructions and harassment by authorities and police and court suits, and then finally the destruction of the homeless gear and the deportation, eviction of 100 to 200 homeless people under the leadership of Chief Fogel, Mayor Coonerty, and Vice Mayor Don Lane at the time, not to mention City Manager Martine Bernal. Those of us who reported on it, of course, some of us are now facing felony charges for reporting on the occupation of a vacant bank building that some were considering using as a community center, since all it was an unused, blighted piece of property. It wasn't blighted in the sense that it wasn't being kept up in a certain sense, but it was a vacant bank, the Wells Fargo Bank leased property, formerly the Coast Commercial Bank at 75 River Street. Wells Fargo, of course, is one of the most notorious foreclosure fraudsters in the country, the foremost foreclosure artist, and a notorious record up in San Francisco. We still can't get the details here in Santa Cruz. Apparently, they don't want to audit them here and find out the situation with robo-signings and so forth. I've criticized Occupy Santa Cruz activists for not being militant enough and demanding that, instead sort of playing patty cake with John Leopold, the supervisor, and, you know, accepting these sort of toothless resolutions that don't really give us more information and that also don't put any more strictures on the county. Oh, the state has to do it, we're told. No. We have to do it. If you're going to wait for the state legislature and the corruption there, the bot legislature to do something, you'll be waiting quite a while. Not saying you shouldn't support those initiatives when they come up, but not to act locally is to place your faith in gods and demons and spirits instead of in all of us. Continuing with the story in Ashland, Ashland City Council also declined up in Oregon to give the Salvation Army $24,000 it requested to run a day center, saying funding should be decided when the city awards social and housing service grants. Police Chief Holderness is working out the details of the proposal for the City Council's consideration. It would ban repeat offenders from downtown temporarily. Those who ventured back before the time limit could be jailed on trespassing charges. Trespass, of course, was the law used to crush and disperse the homeless and the housed Occupy Santa Cruz activists who suddenly found there was this sudden new, not even a law, but an edict around the courthouse and the county building saying you couldn't be there with a sign after 7 o'clock at night, even though there was absolutely no justification or public discussion of this, just armed guards walking around, sheriff's deputies, police officers, security patrols. People were arrested and taken to jail, and those charged. Suddenly the charges disappeared in court because it's pretty clear constitutional violations, although it's also pretty clear constitutional violations against activist Gary Johnson, Ground Zero Gary, as I call him, and that those charges have not disappeared. We have a caller. My goodness. Let's see if we can actually bring this person in. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
And who is this?
This is Eric Navickas.
Yes, the infamous former Ashland City Council member.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was just reading, Eric, a story in the, I don't know if it's the Daily Tidings, I think it's the AP, about Keith Haxton's May 5th arrest, I think it was, for camping. And I guess we talked earlier about the Tuesday protest at City Council, and there's this article I was about to read, City Council tightening its ban on public camping to close a loophole. You want to talk a little bit about, well, first of all, who are you anyway? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
My name is Eric Navickas. I'm a former city councilor with Ashland. I have a background in being an activist in Ashland, taking on a variety of issues from environmental issues to human rights issues. So I got involved in the homeless issues, probably about 8 or 10 years ago, when they were originally passing the camping ban in Ashland, and was involved in some camp-ins at that point. And then when I was on the council, I worked to weaken the camping ban and reduce it from a criminal citation to simply a violation where it stands right now. And I was trying to get rid of the camping ban, but was unsuccessful in that.
How many people would you say actually camp out each night or sleep out each night in violation of this law?
Well, we had a special event the other night, just a camp-in. Let's see, it was the night before last. And we had about 20 people out there camping out. We had a great time. And the city was actually hands-off, which I thought in some ways was unfortunate because they aren't hands-off if you're homeless and camping out, but because, though we did have a coalition of homeless people with us on the plaza, but because we were doing it as a demonstration, they were hands-off.
Right, but what about every night generally? What's your estimate of the number of homeless people that are out there theoretically that would face if the police were militantly going around arresting or citing, you know, those kinds of problems?
Yeah, there's been some studies done by the city, and I'd say there's about 100 to 200 people out there at any given night. And they do sweeps periodically before fire season. One of the interesting things about Ashland is that it is set right up against forest land, and there are a lot of fire issues. And it's been one of the complaints that we've had as to why they don't have a legal place for people to sleep or some type of shelter in the community is because of the fire risk associated with people camping illegally up in the watershed.
Have there been a lot of fires as a consequence of individual campsites?
There really haven't been any. There was a fire that actually burned 11 houses that was allegedly started by a homeless individual someone who has been missed by the system entirely, and there's absolutely no services available for homeless people. So he was you know, suffered from schizophrenia, was a heavy alcoholic, slept under a bridge, a notorious figure in town, and then started a fire. But, you know, you have to ask, who is to blame? Is it the society who can't provide the services to address mental health issues that are most of the time treatable? Or is it the individual who suffers from mental health and the problems with disparity in our culture?
Is this an arson, or was it just carelessness?
It was carelessness, and they actually weren't even able to convict him.
Is he still out there camping?
Because of the fact that... What's that?
Still out there camping?
He's still out there camping, and I...
What's his name?
Has a place under a bridge where he sleeps every night.
Illegally?
Illegally.
But they don't ticket him.
I suspect he has multiple citations. You know, I'm sure it becomes futile at some point. They can't convict him because he does suffer from schizophrenia, but they continue to cite people like that. And I suspect he does have multiple citations.
How many people live in Ashland?
About 24,000 people.
What's the primary business of the town?
It is tourism. There's a Shakespeare Theater in town, and then as well a university, Southern Oregon University. So those are the two powerhouses, economic drivers. And that is one of the problems that is associated with this, is because you have this tourist-based economy, there's a very bigoted attitude of the business owners downtown and the director of the Shakespeare Theater, too, because they want to keep this image of a clean, sort of Disneyland-esque type community rather than something that is authentic, where all walks of life exist together and different classes come together in the city center. There seems to be this attitude that this is only a community for the extremely wealthy.
Now, are you saying that the 24,000 people are mostly business people, or is there a different kinds of people employed differently? Are there farmers or foresters, or I don't know? Are there other, you know? Do we know what the job breakdown is?
You know, I don't have the statistics in front of me right now, but there is quite a bit of class division in the community, where you have this extremely wealthy class that lives up in the hills and have their mansions, and then there still is a large working class sector of the community, but they're slowly being pushed out because of the rapid gentrification that took place in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and the real estate boom that took place. So you've had a lot of those people pushed out of the community who represented more of a working class, and there is a town that's next to Ashland, that's Talent, where more of the working class have now moved.
What's it called?
What's that?
What's it called?
Talent?
Talent?
Talent, Oregon?
Talented, that sort of thing?
Right, exactly.
Huh, and
yeah, that's so a lot of
the
working
class. Do they have a sleeping ban over there? I mean, is it similar laws, or?
They don't have a sleeping ban that I know of. It's a little bit different community, where it is more of a working class community. It doesn't have the tourist base that attracts a lot of the homeless people, because they can panhandle in the downtown area.
You mean in Ashland, not in Talent, right?
In Ashland, right. So, you know, I don't think they see the influx of transients and homeless kids that the city of Ashland might see, so they might not be cracking down as hard on the situation. But I think really it's the fact that you have this tourist economy, where you want to present this image of a very clean town for to promote tourism, that has caused a lot of the problems in the city of Ashland.
Now, is this a matter of prejudice, in the sense that would a business consultant who came in, who was really being objective and wanted to assist the businesses, suggest that there had been a drop in business in the last 10 years because of the presence of poor and homeless people or panhandlers downtown?
There was a commentary in the paper today stating that our demonstration, they're actually working on what's called an exclusion zone in the downtown, where if you get three petty citations in the downtown area, that they can exclude you.
So there was three petty citations or three petty convictions?
Convictions, actually. Three mm-hmm. petty convictions, mm-hmm. Including yeah. sleeping, including scattering rubbish, disorderly conduct, open container, things that would be typical of homeless individuals. And one of the fears also is they're going to increase issuing citations and profile people and issue citations aggressively so that they meet the trigger to be excluded from the downtown.
And has that passed the city council?
It's coming up on the next city council meeting, which is June 5th, next Tuesday night. So we're actually intending to have another demonstration in front of the council chambers where we're going to set up camping to expose the fact that this is targeting homeless people. And that's what I was going to say, was there was a commentary today in the paper that was saying that this isn't really targeting homeless people, it's targeting specific behaviors. But you know, you're dealing, in many cases, with people who have mental health issues and problems with alcoholism, so it's really difficult to differentiate the two and say that this isn't targeting.
Now, are we talking about people where, you know, you have a lot of behavior that is really something which is problematic? Are we talking about people whose presence is considered problematic because of how they look and the fear that such behavior does happen occasionally and might happen at any time?
Right. The second, exactly. You know, really, I go to a lot of urban places, and Ashland is probably one of the safest, tamest urban places that I've been to. You can leave your car and walk downtown and not worry about it whatsoever. So it's really a safe, tame place. But there is this presence of sort of young counterculture kids. Oftentimes they have dogs. And that seems to be the problem that people have. It's just this appearance of these young traveling kids, and usually they're not engaged in criminal activity. Yes, occasionally, you know, these are young kids who do drink sometimes, and there are occasional incidents, but relative to most urban places, I'd say that the incidents are extremely low. And there's a few of the business elite who want to exploit a couple of incidents and say, oh, we have all this aggressive panhandling taking place in the downtown. We have criminal activity, drug sales going on right and left. And it really isn't the case. And, you know, I've had visitors come and ask them, you know, to try to get some type of objective perspective as to whether Ashland seems exceptional as a place where there's lots of crime taking place, and they're shocked to even consider that. They say that this is one of the safest, cleanest downtowns I've been to in a long time.
So you were a council member for what, for 8 years, 4 years?
4 years.
And were you termed out, or were you voted out, or did you just decide to go on and do something else?
I was actually voted out. There was a very aggressive smear campaign that was run against me by the wealthy conservatives in town, and they spent upwards of $10,000 on attack ads against me and bombarded the paper with multiple ads to ensure that I wasn't reelected, and elected a Chamber of Commerce backed candidate.
And I understand you run an art gallery that was the subject of a fire at some point.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's really triggered a lot of these recent issues with the council coming down with some of the more draconian policies on the homeless issue, is there was a fire in my studio, actually. A homeless person couldn't get their meds. They had their bags stolen, and they had their meds in the bag. And he had an attack, went out that night, broke some windows downtown, lit a trash can on fire, and threw it into the staircase that leads up to my gallery space. And it caused significant damage to the building. And that's what's really triggered a lot of the recent crackdown on the homeless.
But you didn't call for that yourself.
No, I'm not on the council anymore.
No, I mean, as a citizen, you didn't call for that either.
No, and this was really an unusual incident. And, you know, the fact that the person didn't have their meds, it's interesting because the city, actually one of the last actions that I took up was to set up some type of homelessness task force. And they set up an ad hoc committee of concerned citizens to look at recommendations to the city council for what to do about the homeless issue. And the ad hoc committee came forward with various proposals, including a day use center. And they were gave the city the opportunity to contribute $24,000, in order to pay the rent for 1 year for the day use center. And the Salvation Army was going to cover all the operational costs for a day use center. And that would have provided a place for people to store their gear, had a full-time staff doing outreach with the homeless community, given homeless individuals a place to have an address, to have a phone, to have internet services. And from my perspective, had we had that day use center, the fire incident might not have taken place, because you would have had someone doing outreach, and the individual who threw the trash can into the stairwell was actually a homeless vet, and there's veteran services nearby, and if someone had been doing outreach, talking to him, finding out what his situation was, very well he might have not had his bag stolen with his medication in the first place, because he would have had a safe place to store it. But if that had been the case, I sincerely doubt that we would have had the incident downtown that we had.
So,
and the city council really did pass up an opportunity to the $24,000. The city annual budget's over $100 million, so $24,000 is a really nominal cost for the city of Ashland.
What's the unemployment rate like in Ashland? Is it going up, going down, staying the same?
My understanding is that it's relatively high. In association with the national average.
What about,
you know, we get a lot of college students who fill the tourist related jobs. Mm-hmm. We have very large population of retirees, and we have really a large population of trust funder type individuals who really don't need jobs.
Has it changed in the last year or two with the economy, or has it pretty much stayed stable in terms of unemployment, in terms of foreclosures?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, Ashland's been somewhat missed by the economic downturn, though I think the economic downturn broadly has probably brought more homeless people into the community, but Ashland's been missed somewhat. Basically, because we're a tourist-based economy, you have a lot of people who aren't taking trips to Europe this year or the last few years, and instead they're staying domestically and coming to Oregon. And actually the Shakespeare Theaters had two record seasons. The last two seasons have been a record. So really we're not seeing like a downturn in business or a lot of businesses closing downtown. The economy is doing fairly well, and it's fairly stable.
So it's kind of ironic that the businesses are complaining about downturn problems. Maybe they're hoping for even better times, and they can only clear away the Jews, I mean the homeless, from the streets.
yeah.
What about Occupy Ashland? Is there much of an Occupy movement? I know in Santa Cruz, a number of us are under indictment for felonies and misdemeanors for simply in the situation where I was reporting on an incident that happened in a vacant bank that was taken over peacefully for 3 or 4 days and then left peacefully. What's happening with Occupy Ashland up there, and how does that link in with the homeless situation?
Occupy was really active last fall, and there was a consistent occupation of the downtown plaza. As winter came on, a lot of that dispersed like it has nationally, and there continued to be general assemblies once a week, but really the organization the grassroots organization that put together the recent homeless camp-in in the downtown were a lot of the same individuals who have been really active in organizing the Occupy movement. So in some ways it was sort of a rebirth of the local Occupy movement, but more specific to this this issue.
Now, would you say, compared with a year ago, there are more activists active in Ashland than there were?
Compared to a year ago, actually, I've seen less people getting involved in some ways. It's somewhat ironic, considering the national climate. But I think really 10 years ago, Ashland was an activist community, and there was a lot going on. I think because of the rapid gentrification of that era, a lot of those people left town, either went to find jobs in Portland or elsewhere. But it really does feel like the town is becoming more and more elitist and less working class citizenry.
So I'm looking at a couple of other you're famous as an individual or mentioned in the papers for we talked about this yesterday or yes it was yesterday or last night the beanbag not beanbag. Shoe throw at the throw a shoe at the president, and in which case it was President Bush, sort of in honor of the Iraqi patriot who threw a shoe at Bush when he went through Iraq, what, 5 years ago or something.
Right. Yeah, that was the opening show of our gallery, and it was, you know, sort of a last minute show that we put together at the gallery, and we wanted to open it as an alternative gallery that was showing more controversial and outsider art, and so we quickly put together this show. I got a couple of sheets of plywood, gridded off Bush's face, painted it real large, had it connected with bicycle inner tubes to the sides of the wall, so it was like a big springboard. And then we set up another big launch thing with bicycle inner tubes as well. So there were like arrows with shoes on the end of them, and we painted the bottoms of the shoes and fired them at the large image of Bush. And really, our gallery is an independent gallery that isn't with the gallery association, and we rented some really cheap office space, and this was sort of the first opening event, and we ended up getting international press as a result of doing this. Which was pretty inspiring, and inspiring because of the fact that we were able to show solidarity with the Iraqi journalist who threw the shoe at Bush.
Well, probably what you need now is to have maybe some miniature drone missiles being hurled at Obama, perhaps? That might subject you to Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act, which, of course, would make you indefinitely detainable and without an attorney for that duration, or possibly assassinatable.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's true. Obama has not lived up to a lot of what we had hoped he would be, but most of us didn't really expect that in the first place anyways. But, you know, considering the extrajudicial killings that have gone on under this administration, the continued use of Guantanamo, a variety of issues.
But you notice how, you know, how soft you are, even in your statement now about Obama. He's doing exactly the same, in fact, worse policies than Bush. And yet the anger you had against Bush, you're not displaying against Obama. Is this because of what accounts for this?
You know, I have to be honest, I'm going into another election season, not myself, but Obama is, and, you know, even though I'm not satisfied with the policies of Obama wholly, I'd hate to see Romney put in and another era of extremist policies of Bush. I mean, we really haven't seen the aggressive blitzkrieg-style takeover of multiple other
There have been far more drone and cruise missile attacks under Obama than under Bush ever. Much more massive surveillance. I mean, I think you're wrong, and I think that, you know, this, you might be right at the last minute if you might decide to go in and cast a vote one way or the other. But to spend months and months and months muting yourself on this issue because of the fear you might get, Attila the Hun rather than Genghis Khan, to me is, I'll put that aside because, you know, I mean, this is the reason you had Occupy, because politicians like yourself were all falling in line with the Democrats, regardless, whenever it comes, you know, when push comes to shove. I'm hearing a beeping. Are you doing at that end?
I'm doing fine. No, I'm not cutting out.
I understand you were also on the council when they banned nudity in Ashland.
Yeah, actually, that was probably one of the issues that led to me not getting reelected. And I took a hard line on that because I fully defend civil liberties and can't see that the human body is something that we should criminalize.
What was the background of that? I know in Berkeley, you know, they banned nudity made it a misdemeanor, and nobody could ever get convicted. So they changed it, made it an infraction so that people would be convicted by judges and wouldn't get to a jury. Is your nudity ban a national and a misdemeanor or an infraction?
I believe it is a misdemeanor. I'm almost positive it is.
Has anybody actually been tried for nudity in Ashland?
Not since they passed the ban.
So everybody is going home and covering their wee wee because of the ban.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I mean, and that, you know, it's another thing that can impact the homeless, and that was one of the issues that we were bringing up at the time, that, you know, people without houses who need to bathe often are nude. And I really haven't heard that it's had any impact to this point. But when it did come up, the council actually talked about it before I was on the council and passed a limited new ban within the downtown area. And this was in response to the police chief bringing it forward because of the kids who were hanging out downtown and the popular style of wearing their pants somewhat low so their pubic hairs were showing.
Shocking.
So it was a response to that. And in the city, we'd actually had various protests using nudity as a tool, and there have been various art events where nudity was involved. And so we actually staged some protests at that point. And at that point, this was before I was on the council, we organized a croquet match on the front lawn of the city council chambers and police department, completely nude. And we had about 35 people out there, completely nude, playing croquet on the front lawn.
Were you a part of that nude event?
I was, right.
Good for you. Good for you, man. I will.
I'll try to
at least briefly overlook your Democratic Party illness there. So.
No, I'm not a registered Democrat, and
you're still talking,
you know,
like one.
Okay, but so anyways, as a result of the demonstrations, the ACLU got involved. Basically, they limited the nude ban to the downtown area and didn't have the entire city included in it. And then when I was on the council, there was a gentleman who was walking around nude occasionally. He'd go on a nude walk about once a month, and he was an older gentleman, and he walked around the city. And you know, I thought it was great. I thought it was really important to challenge people's status quo understanding of the human body. So I thought it was a really good experience. And then one morning he came on to some kids walking to school, and these parents...
Let me interrupt you for a moment.
Really,
there's a caller who's trying to call in. Let me suggest the caller, give it about a minute and call back, and we'll kind of add you to the mix here. But go ahead. So there was a nudity downtown ban, then this naked guy walking around, perhaps similar to the Berkeley's naked guy 20 years ago, he became, you know, the subject of horror and dismay.
Right, because he came on to some young kids walking to school. And then our most conservative counselor at that time brought up that we should ban nudity around the schools in addition to the downtown. And the entire council at that point felt that this was entirely ridiculous to ban nudity around the schools. Just, we didn't want a dumb law on the books like that. We really didn't have a problem with nudists walking around schools. So the council rejected it, and we didn't do that. And then this other individual, allegedly from Missouri, shows up a week later after we refused to pass this nudity ban around the schools, and begins to target the schools, walking around entirely naked around the schools. So the mayor decides to bring the issue back on the agenda, and then they passed an entire nudity ban with me protesting the entire time.
Were you naked at the council?
No, not protesting in that sense.
No,
protesting in the council chambers verbally around the issue that It is, again, an attack on civil rights. We had had these demonstrations involving nudity. We had had art events involving nudity. It really wasn't a problem in our community, and we shouldn't respond in this way to this individual who was provoking us to pass a restriction on nudity.
The name of the individual?
We never found out his name. The police chief said they couldn't. They questioned him a bit. He said he was from Missouri. My feeling was that the person, there were probably already laws on the books to address someone specifically walking around a school naked, could be defined as disorderly
conduct.
Well, you
said the original old guy attempted to come onto some students naked, what, with an erection or something, or?
No, exactly not. He was just simply walking on a regular walk without any lewd behavior. And there is already lewd behavior.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought. But you said initially that was a proposal and it was rejected because, you know, that was, you know, but it was proposed because apparently he used the phrase, come on to some kids. So I don't
know. No, I didn't mean it.
You mean
no,
came upon, perhaps?
He came upon some children walking to school.
I see.
And, you know, basically he just walked by them like he walked every day, nude, or at least on his monthly walk.
And has nudity then been, you know, are people still walking around naked at all, or have you heard of anything happening? This ban was passed, this full ban was passed, I guess, in January of 2010, according to the news story I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's happened since then as far as...
people have allowed their civil liberties essentially to go by the by in that regard.
Exactly. And I think it's unfortunate. And there's other issues, too, with it, where we have a place where people used to discreetly swim in the creek, Ashland Creek that flows down through Lithia Park. Above the park, there's some nice swimming pools. And now if someone were to complain, the police would have the statutory authority to make an arrest. And it's always been a place that's been very discreet and limited.
So, again, we are talking with the former city council member from Ashland. And your name, of course, is?
Eric Navickas.
And, Eric, I kind of had hoped to get Keith to call in. He was supposed to call at 6, but I think he either didn't make it or for some reason there was a blockage. Anything come out of the protest on Tuesday that you want to talk about? This was a 20-person protest against the sleeping ban proposal and the exclusion proposal up in Ashland, Oregon, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's begun to build a lot of momentum in opposition. We're hoping to get a really good turnout at the council meeting and put a lot of pressure on these councilors. Unfortunately, you know, really due to misrepresentation of the facts during the election campaigns and very aggressive far-right conservative campaigning and smear campaigns, we have a council that really, I don't believe, represents the constituency of Ashland. And it's a far-right council, and they're pretty locked into this proposal to pass an exclusion zone in the downtown.
Now, the ACLU didn't challenge the nudity law. Are they going to challenge the sleeping ban or the exclusion zone laws?
You know, I'm on the board of the Civil Liberties Defense Center, and we're looking closely at it, and it sounds like we're going to get an attorney together to challenge that law.
And you're going to bring the attorney?
It has a variety of issues associated with it. One is the double jeopardy of the Fifth Amendment, because they've tried to... Other municipalities have exclusion zones, but they give you a civil order to do that, which avoids triggering the Fifth Amendment double jeopardy restriction, because you can receive a civil charge and a criminal charge for the same crime, but you can't receive two criminal charges. So in order to meet the 14th Amendment requirement of due process, they've put in you have to appear before a judge before this can be passed. But that makes it a criminal offense, which triggers the Fifth Amendment double jeopardy restriction, because then you're giving someone two criminal charges for the same crime.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping to challenge it on the Fifth Amendment, and we'll see. We haven't really consulted with our attorney exactly how we intend to challenge it, but I'm hoping that we do move forward with that.
What can people do here in Santa Cruz to assist you? Do you want letters sent to the paper, to the mayor's office? Would you like nude runners with torches to appear in town, threatening to camp out in the plaza? Just kidding, of course, in some respects.
Yeah, you know, I think at this point, Ashland is the focus of this discussion, and it would be great to see people come up and join in the camp-ins. And we're going to be next Tuesday night on the front lawn of the city council chambers, camping out once again. So, you know, if you want to come up here to Ashland, I'd love to see this become the center of discussion of this issue and begin to challenge this on a national level.
Now, is there a website people can go to get more information about this?
We have a Facebook page. It's Legalized Sleep Network. Legalized Sleep Network. It's where we're posting updates and has discussion on the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So
anybody been... go ahead.
Go ahead.
Anybody arrested with Occupy Ashland facing charges?
I couldn't say for sure on that. The city was pretty hands-off, and there wasn't a really aggressive Occupy movement. They really stuck to nonviolent civil disobedient tactics and mm-hmm. simply occupied the main plaza in the downtown. And eventually, one night when it wasn't occupied, the police came in and stole a lot of the gear and equipment. And after that, the momentum was destroyed, and Occupy ended as a real occupation. You know, my belief with Occupy is that it is hard to sustain long-term campaigns, especially in small communities like this, and more attack and retreat tactics are more effective in, you know, getting out the numbers and having a real impact on the issues.
Okay, so a Legalized Sleep Network on Facebook is one place to go to find out what's cooking. And I guess if you want, I encourage you to post things that people can do if they can't come up to Oregon, because it's, you know, it's like hundreds and hundreds of miles from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, you know, go to the City of Ashland website. Just Google City of Ashland, go to their website. It has all the context to all the counselors. If you want to contact the mayor and council, there is a comment to the council listserv, as well as their individual emails. So bombarding them with emails, even if you're from Santa Cruz, I think it's important that they are aware that citizens from other communities are
Sounds
paying
good.
Attention.
Hang on for a second, Eric. I'm going to put somebody else on the line at the same time as me. I have a question for you. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Eric. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Robert. What's up?
Is this infamous Gary Johnson, our own sleep criminal?
Yeah, you always phrase things like that. Why do you do that, Robert?
Oh, it's my style. You know me, Gary. Have you had any conversations before with the man I've been talking to?
No, not that I know of. I think I'm following him on Twitter, though.
Well, I should introduce you to each other, or maybe you should introduce yourselves to each other. Eric,
I'm a big fan of Haxton and the sleep legalized sleep thing, and I'm tripping. I was listening, and I'm shocked that Ashland's got the same like economy, politics, the legal trick, the like trading on the outdated cool reputation of the place to get people to go there. The perception management when people are randomly walking around doing weird shit and then disappear. It's like just like home.
So, Eric, Gary, as I told you, is a guy who's been convicted of sleeping, actually lodging, the state anti-lodging law here in California. They have a law that is rarely used, but it's pulled out to go after protesters. Yet you're still outside, Gary, and one of the things you told the judge is, I think, that you can't really obey all laws if one of the laws is not to sleep at night, right?
Well, I'm wondering if sleeping out in international waters, maybe taking a swim, take a nap, and then swim back in might be the only legal way to sleep right now.
Which you can't do in Ashland because Ashland's inland, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can get outside of the city limits, and there is Forest Service land relatively close, but for someone to be expected to walk out of the city limits with heavy gear, he doesn't have an automobile, it would be very difficult to get out of the city limits.
I mean, I know in Oregon about 15 years ago, I think the homeless activists were able to get some sort of state law that Oregon state officials could not confiscate your property without 24-hour or 72-hour notice. Is that still?
Yeah, that still exists, that nominal law to protect people's basic rights. But that's about it. Otherwise, we ban camping regularly and use all of the dirty tactics to oppress the homeless.
Have you used a necessity defense effectively up there in Oregon? Like, Gary, I know that you tried it, Ed and Ed Fry, your attorney, tried it without success in the rather, prejudiced courtroom of Judge Maragonda here in Santa Cruz. What's the situation like up in Ashland?
It's been brought up around the Eighth Amendment, the Jones versus City of Los Angeles case. I know it was the big precedent, even though that was settled out of court. But it's been brought up by the ACLU in the council chambers. I don't know if it's been brought up in a courtroom. And we
should say that what we're talking about is the defense that, yes, it was illegal, but I had to do it because I had no other alternative. All the other alternatives were worse and would have subjected me to a greater evil.
Oh, right. Lesser of two evils defense on that. The case that I've heard is around the Eighth Amendment. It's cruel and unusual to arrest someone for sleeping who has no other options, and it's criminalizing poverty. And like I said, that has been brought up to this city council that there is.
Has it been used? Has it been used in court at all or not?
The case that I know is the Jones versus Los Angeles.
No. In Ashland.
In Oregon, no, it hasn't been brought up in court. And I know that is how Keith Haxton intends to challenge his charges right now that he faces.
Gary, do you have any questions or comments here for Eric?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to know, echoing that Chew Bush thing, is there any hope of getting a Dennis Latterly, like, sleeping bag mud fest going?
Yeah, it'd be great to bring some street art and theater into this issue, and maybe we will for this upcoming campaign that we're planning on the city council chamber front lawn. We're having some meetings this week about that. And we were actually, one of the things that we were thinking about as a fun little action is the homeless sweep in the downtown. And we're going to try to organize a bunch of homeless people, or it's been brought up anyways, to sweep the sidewalks in the downtown, and sort of a pun on the proposed exclusion zone where they are sweeping, doing a sweep of homeless in the downtown, unfortunately.
I would say for the city council thing coming up that it isn't an if. They will profile. They will exclude, just like they do in Santa Cruz.
I'm sure. And, it's unfortunate that they're trying to portray this as being specific to behavior, because I'm sure once this is implemented that they will profile, they will be aggressive in offering citations. And, the police should have a job of reconciling problems in the downtown, not just jumping right to a citation. And I have no doubt that this will become a way of social cleansing in our community, to remove the undesirables, as they say.
I'm also wondering if anybody's reporting any red tags of property problems or issues with child protective services, because those are techniques used here as well to oppress homeless.
I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to, but there has been the Fair Housing Commission, I think it is, with the state, did a study on the city of Ashland as far as their landlords, and they were finding discrimination against people of color from the landlords in the city. I'm sure that there are all levels of discrimination when it comes to rentals in the city and dealing with landlords.
I think what Gary's talking about is if a landlord allows homeless people on his property, and the city moves in to red tag it for zoning violations. That's what happened with Mark Maron, the Sacramento attorney who set up a homeless camping zone in Sacramento. And it's happened at different places throughout California. I know in Eureka, the South Spit Jetty was cleared back in the late 90s through a phony health scare, where they sent in health officials claiming there were problems, but they never proved anything, but they used that as the basis to clear out dozens and dozens of homeless folks and families there. What about Eugene in Portland? You have homeless activists in both those cities. If anybody can come down to support you, is there a chance of doing the kind of, you know, everybody comes and sleeps in the plaza and the kind of, I guess you got increasingly balmy summer weather up there in Ashland?
In Ashland, yeah, it's really beautiful right now. It would be great to do more outreach, and it's actually why I've agreed to talk on your show, is to try to get out to the people of Santa Cruz to get some folks up here, but I'm going to be trying to contact people in Eugene and Portland as well. That would be great to get them down there.
Gary, you better pack your sleeping bag there.
I'm not sure I can leave the state yet. We'll see June 14th.
Yeah, it's the same thing I have. I'm banned from leaving the state at the moment. I'm trying to get that. I'll try to get that condition overturned tomorrow when I go to court again, but we'll see how that goes. I guess I'll let you two have the last word. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there is another option, possibly. Seeking political asylum from India, now that they've Supreme Court there has recognized sleep as a basic fundamental human right.
So you're going to go to the Indian consulate in San Francisco and throw yourself on their mercy, that sort of thing? Or?
I'm wondering what it takes.
Yeah, there have also been suggestions that Amnesty International or UN human rights groups investigate the kinds of criminal violations that cities or even the federal government supposedly has come out with papers claiming that criminalizing homeless is not an appropriate approach to dealing with local city problems. That came out in a recent report. Whether they actually do anything, you know, is problematic, but it could put some certainly propaganda pressure, you know, embarrass city authorities. And I mean, you know, at Santa Cruz, we've often talked about doing sleep-ins downtown in front of the shops that would, you know, let the tourists know the kind of businesses they're supporting that criminalize homeless people. And the hope is that there's a conscience there underneath that's going to impact all this. Of course, the laws have been specifically designed to make it not only illegal to sleep at night downtown, but to be able to lie down during the day is also illegal downtown. But there are ways around that. We could lie on top of our vehicles and so forth. But it does require, you know, often requires organization at a level or at least initiative at a level. Perhaps we should have you come down, Eric, and do some organizing here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I've got my hands pretty full up here in Ashland, unfortunately, but...
Gary, any final?
Yeah, we need some type of national movement taking place, and it's unfortunate because actually the state legislature in Oregon is pushing for. They have a program called the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've heard that one before.
Now it has to come forward. Yeah, and
10-year plan to talk about ending homelessness. I've heard that. Let me interrupt you, because I've gone over with this. I'm afraid everybody may be falling asleep with us, even though I'm interested in what we're talking about. Gary, I'm going to give you the last word because you're the man down here who's facing 2.5 years in jail for snoozing. So,
I was protesting the criminalization of sleep, and then I was protesting the criminalization of protest, and I support legalized sleep.
And indeed, your website, if I'm not mistaken, is. Peacecamp 2010 Insider.
Insider.blogspot.com, and there's the Twitter and blah, 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 blah.
And you, Eric, you suggest the Facebook page for, what is it, Legalize, give me the exact terms.
Legalize Sleep Network.
Legalize Sleep Network. So I want to thank you both for being on the air. I'm going to roll and... I want with the latest developments. I hope people, if anyone is going up to Oregon, definitely swing through Ashland on Tuesday and get in touch with Eric through the Legalized Sleep Network, I guess, on Facebook.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're down here and, you know, you want to do some, Gary can advise you on how to sleep prominently with a sign, sleep is not a crime, and possibly get a six-month jail sentence for your trouble.
Wow.
Sorry to put it that way,
no,
folks.
No comment.
Indeed. All right, well, I don't want you to aid and abet any criminal conspiracies to fall asleep. That would be criminal. Thank you both for being on the air.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Ashman.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks, Santa Cruz.
And that was Ashland and Santa Cruz talking about the sleeping bans. Aiding and abetting, of course, is the crime that I'm not really accused of it in those specific terms, but that's the legal theory that Rebecca Young will be presenting tomorrow in court. For those of you interested in following this case, there is a, and actually seeing all seven of the remaining Santa Cruz 11, the seven remaining of the Santa Cruz 11 who are going to be going to court at 8:15 in Department 6 or 7, we're not sure which, to get an update on a number of things, and there's going to be a photographer taking our pictures, so nee. Hopefully he'll show up. And we are working on, again, raising the issue of how dangerous this is, not just to us personally, but to everybody in the community, to criminalize protest in Santa Cruz of a peaceful kind, particularly in the way it's being done through these bizarre conspiracy prosecutions where seven people are accused of 14 felonies and 14 misdemeanors, total of two felonies and two misdemeanors each, in cases that the judges are throwing out, but it's taking a toll on the defendants. It's stopping us from protest activity. It's costing a lot of money for a lot of people. It's, of course, taking up court time and public expense. And it's chilling those who aren't even directly involved because they're afraid. Even the kind of protest that that Eric, the former council member we just talked to, is doing up in Ashland, it seems like a kind of it risks a conspiracy felony charge here in Santa Cruz. Although I think I would do that again, even if I have to. I've gone to many a sleep out, and now is the first time they ever charged me with anything of this kind. And the first thing, actually the only time I ever heard of anybody in any occupations, there have been numerous occupations in Santa Cruz. Some of them had to be ended by police arrests, which this one didn't. But it shows you how much harsher and how much more overweening police and prosecutorial power is, or how much more nervous they are. I don't even know why they're so nervous. There's not that much of a, I wish there were more of a groundswell of opposition in Santa Cruz. I'm going to turn now shortly to some street interviews. Actually, some of these are more suite interviews than street interviews, where I mean like in the suites rather than in the streets. I actually wanted to check in with a merchant or two and see what they thought about what was cooking, and I kind of did that in one of these interviews. A couple of other interviews are here, too. Let's move on with this. I may get a couple more incoming calls. I think I've, who knows, maybe Keith Rupp and Ashland will call in briefly, too. But I think we've kind of covered the subject pretty thoroughly. I want to remind you that if you want to call in to talk on any of these subjects, you can. And the phone number to call in is 427-3772, 427-3772. Off air, you can reach me at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is, of course, an abbreviation for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights group that I sit around and chat with every Wednesday from 10 to 12. At the Sub Rosa Cafe, to which you are cordially invited, 703 Pacific. So think about that one. More information, go to the HUFF website, huffsantacruz.org, which seems to be getting better and presumably is going to get even more current as time goes on.
Well,
so we're in the Fair Trade Clothing, is that the full name of the store here?
It's Avatar Imports, actually. Okay.
If you can.
Yeah, no problem. It's Avatar Imports.
And we're talking with?
Christian.
And Christian, you are heading out of town to San Francisco, moving, but you've been here for more than three years.
I've been in Santa Cruz for 5 years, and I've worked on the Avenue for 3 years.
And how old are you now?
I'm turning 23 in 2 weeks.
So you're an attractive young woman. How is it for you on Pacific Avenue? Fairly comfortable? Has things changed? How does the city just generally strike you?
I think that things have improved a lot since the hospitality people started walking around downtown, especially during the day. And this end of downtown, we have a lot of problems with the vagrant population and stuff, but it's gotten a lot better. And during the day, I'm extremely comfortable. At night, however, I definitely do not favor this end of downtown.
So have you actually had any real specific problems, either violence or threats of violence, or is it more just a general sense of unease at times?
Just at times a sense of unease. We've never had any problems. We're really lucky, and we have great customers. But before the hospitality people came and started patrolling downtown, we did have some homeless individuals harassing customers and being really aggressive, asking for money, and just loitering, which was causing problems. But that hasn't been the case for about a year or so.
And you generally are covering the story yourself?
Most days. There are two other girls that work here, but between two of us, we split the time fairly evenly.
Mostly tourists visit the store or locals?
During the summer, we have tourists, but we have a really big client base in the local population. We try to cater a lot to the local style and scene.
So you're off to join a legal firm, and you've been working as a salesperson. Do you have a passion in life, or are you simply trying to make ends meet, or what's driving you right now in terms of where you're going?
In terms of where I'm going right now, definitely repaying my student debts is the top priority. And
how much is that?
Right now, I have about $5,000 that I'm left, which isn't a lot in comparison to a lot of other kids, but I have worked consistently full-time for the past 5 years paying for my school, which I'm really glad that I did and wasn't left burdened with a huge amount. But for the immediate future, I'm more concerned with paying off the debts I have now for my education than pursuing my passions, which might not be as profitable.
What are your passions?
I'd like to be a writer or a journalist, but just realistically, it's not feasible.
Have you done any writing before?
Yeah, I've done a lot of writing at UC Santa Cruz, but I've nothing like published or in the...
What kind of stuff do you write about?
Fiction, a lot of historical stuff. I'm a history major, so I'm really into history.
And you're saying European history is what you're studying?
Yeah, I'm a dual citizen with France and America, so I definitely like...
Tu parles français?
Oui, je parle français. Je suis moitié française.
C'est very exclusive shop.
Yeah.
So you also have two other jobs. What kind of work do you do as well?
I work at a deli and for a cater company.
And how many hours a week does that translate to?
Usually it translates to about 50 hours a week.
And what's your hourly wage?
I'm not really comfortable.
You're making more than minimum wage.
Oh, yes.
Are you making a living wage?
Barely a living wage.
That would be $13.50 an hour is a living wage.
Depending on the situation. In catering, it balances out to be a little bit more than that because of tips, which is really awesome. Unfortunately, the deli doesn't have a lot of tips, and that's closer to minimum. But with this, it's enough to pay rent and get what I need to get done each month. So.
How's your rent? Are you living with other people?
Yes, I'm living with other people, so it's not bad compared to other people. I only pay $5.90 a month, which for Santa Cruz is not very substantial.
And have things gotten more stressful in the last year?
Actually, I want to say that things have gotten less stressful for me in the past year because I have been able to expand my working hours and really lock down my financial situation. But for other people, a lot of my other friends working like bars and restaurants have lost their jobs and been laid off and doing teaching things, especially in Santa Cruz, been laid off. I luckily have not faced that situation.
Are more folks like crashing on your couch than a year ago?
Definitely a lot more. A lot of people have to move home to their parents. That's in the past year or so. A lot of my friends who even after graduation had found jobs ended up not being able to make ends meet and had to move home with their parents. That is something that I see more and more of nearly by the day.
Has the economy impacted your personal relationships at all?
I think the economy impacts everybody's personal relationships, especially in struggling times like this, where parents, feel like they can't help their children, and it causes lots of problems.
Is that true with you and your family?
Yeah, definitely.
That put a strain to some extent on your relationship.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the economy has put a lot of children in the position to be supporting their parents, which is not, I think, something that our generation was mentally prepared for.
You could always join the army.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit too late for that.
Afghanistan needs good women.
Oh, I don't even...
Catches you breathless.
Exactly. There's nothing I could even say. I'm totally, totally supportive of the armed forces. Memorial Day, the United States government, but that is not a path I would choose for myself at all.
So you, if you were to ask your political opinion, you would favor continued occupation of Afghanistan?
I wouldn't necessarily say I would favor continued occupation. I don't know enough about it to really have a solid opinion, and kind of in my opinion, I don't really know that anybody knows enough about it to really say that they know, because there's so many levels of government and so many different stages through which information is filtered. You can never really know what you're getting is whether it's true or not 100%. So I wouldn't say I am necessarily for or against, but I definitely think that it's sad that amongst all of this like politically charged events going on the past couple of years, that the armed forces have been getting such a bad rap, because there are a lot of people involved in the armed forces that, you know, are just kind of puppets to the greater scheme of things.
So if you could do anything you want, you would be a writer right now?
Oh, yeah. If I could do anything I would be a writer. I'd probably be a travel writer, since I travel a lot and I like to do that. And I've written for some, like, blogs and stuff, but that would be awesome. But unfortunately, the printed word is going down pretty fast.
The blogged word.
Yeah, but I, you know, this is my big problem facing that I face now going forward, is that I just hate technology. I hate computers, but it is something that is impossible to work around. You cannot have a real high-paying job in this day and age without being completely infatuated and controlled by technology.
What's been your most positive experience that comes to mind in the last 3 years?
I think that a lot of, like, the community experiences I've had here. I did have, like, a tough time with my family, and my employers and people I've met in the community have been so supportive and awesome, and that's something that I definitely am taking away from Santa Cruz in a really positive light.
Negative experience?
Negative experience, I have to say that I thought that people really over-exaggerated with the homeless control population. Like, I thought it was really wrong of people to say that homeless population needed to be dealt with, that it was a problem, but living in Santa Cruz has completely changed my mind. They've been detrimental, aggressive. My houses have been robbed multiple times.
By homeless people?
Yeah, which luckily, like, there I was there, so I was able to, like, call the cops. And I just think that that's something that's gotten a little bit out of control, especially with, like, the Occupy movement, some of the young kids. And that's disturbing for me to see somebody with younger siblings. Like, I don't understand how there are 15-year-old kids, like, living on the street. That just is really, really disturbing to me. And, like, obviously rampant drug use, which is another thing that I think sources, funds should be directed towards fighting versus installing a 5,000-person Warrior D-League stadium.
You're just not a fan of the North Dakota gang, or is it the South Dakota gang? That's where they're coming from, though.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you know, at first I was super idealistic and tried to be really nice, but the truth of the matter is that it dirties the streets, keep customers from coming into stores, they harass tourists.
Well, I'm talking about the sports stadium. That wasn't what you were talking about.
No, oh, that's the Warriors. They're coming from now they're moving to San Francisco, but they were a little farther north. But I am a huge basketball fan, but the D-League is just not really a big deal. I mean, I can't really think of that many people who would pay to go to a D-League game. And also, I think it's a huge mistake to put in a massive stadium here in downtown. They're trying to clean up the downtown, but that's only going to bring, like, scalpers, poachers, and, you know, bad elements, plus the many sports bars that are sure to pop up.
How's the business doing here?
I think pretty well. We're lucky we have a lot of dedicated customers, and I think that we have a really unique thing going on in Santa Cruz, and we are local. We design everything here, so a lot of people really appreciate that and are dedicated to the store. We're lucky. We have great customers. I think we do pretty well.
Anything you want to add? This will be going out on Free Radio probably Thursday night or Sunday morning.
No, I think that's it. Santa Cruz is a great place, regardless of anything else.
And we've been talking with?
Christiane.
Thanks, Christiane.
Thank you.
I'll give you mine. So, you're before we go, you had an additional concern you noted about a large chain store that's coming in to take the place of the Borders chain store.
Yeah, Forever 21 is supposed to be opening in August in the space formerly occupied by Borders. It's a large chain store that sells extremely discounted clothing catered to the young adult female, and I think it's just going to completely change the vibe of downtown beyond what the Warrior Stadium will do, as it's going to bring in all of the UC and Cabrillo students directly to that store, completely undermine all the small boutiques in the area, which just can't afford realistically to sell things for the same prices as Forever 21. So we'll have to see. I'm sure that the retail sector is going to be hurt by the new Forever 21. Food vendors probably will enjoy the new traffic, but for local people, I think that who own small businesses, I think it's going to be a really, really hard obstacle to overcome.
And again, we've been talking with
Christiane.
Thank you, Christiane.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. It's about 5:20. We have an instrumentalist here in front of the old Borders building. With a display device within 50 feet of an ATM machine, but he's not panhandling, he's performing, so it's right on. Earlier, a couple hours ago, a woman was singing with her back to the theater. And I believe the telephones are disappearing from downtown, the pay phones.
And the point I was making was that a young singer was sitting with her back to the Cinema 9 Theater, which is, of course, the large theater downtown. And she did that for quite a while, when, of course, a host came along and told her that she was not allowed to do that. And she got up and left, and no longer had singing. So we have, again, the sort of genteel control where these spaces are not allowed to be used by the community because they are now essentially being monopolized by the merchants and by police priorities about making things look commercially viable. Although it's kind of ironic because I think that the presence of people singing and life on the streets is quite a commercial draw, actually, in Santa Cruz.
There's only one now near the Del Mar Theater.
And here I'm talking about the disappearance of payphones downtown, which for those of us who are not cell phone happy is a sad thing because it means we are more and more, there's less and less public access to phones. Indeed, certain groups like Take Back Santa Cruz have pressured the removal of phones along Ocean Street near the freeway at some of the 7-Eleven type places and gas stations, allegedly as part of the anti-drug dealer approach, but actually this impacts poor and homeless people who then don't have access to payphones and they don't have cell phones, although I guess cell phones are getting cheaper these days, I'm told. Who knows, I may actually succumb.
And one near the Cinema 9. We do in a beach downtown shuttle. 25 cents. I think it used to be free.
So you're talking about
Casey Livingood here, right across from the Sub Rosa. Casey, you had a special assignment. You went out to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call them today. Today is Wednesday, the 30th. What was your objective out there?
To document any changes in policy or any changes really at the Homeless Services Center due to a new administration and
interested also in
wait a minute. No, you get to announce it. Hang on. So on the line with me with a very important announcement is Uncle Dennis, the grand old man of Free Radio.
Robert and Free Radio listeners, I'm pleased to announce that we are back on the air. I want to advise our listeners, however, that we are operating in backup mode, which means we're only transmitting with about 18 watts. So you'll probably pick us up in Santa Cruz, but if you're in one of our previously fringe areas, you're not going to pick us up. But we are back on the air for Santa Cruz.
Excellent. Is that 18 watts likely to expand back to its beloved 100 watts anytime soon?
Well, I've gotten parts for the transmitter, and along with the rest of the engineering crew.
All right. Three cheers for the engineering crew.
What's that?
I say three cheers. Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray for the engineering crew. So there. Dennis?
We're listening to the radio.
No. There's a delay.
Can I turn my radio down?
You can't listen to the radio. You should know that better than that. And for those who are listening to the radio now, if you're calling in, you should turn down your radio so you can actually be in a real dialogue. So, Dennis, you're coming into the studio in about 20 minutes to do some creaming and dredging.
No, you should put on one of my old shows.
You mean one of those tired shows that I keep playing the same ones over and over again?
I should really record another...
You should, yes. But, you know, I mean, I was actually... One of your shows was playing before I came on the air, Coral... And Rick, who recently, of course, has left for Florida, but his memory remains, and he's probably listening to us out there. Shout out to Rick. I can put that one on again, and who knows? It'll just be creamy, dreggy all through the night.
Thank you, Robert. And if I get some dinner and rest a little bit, we've been at this for. There were about 5 hours myself, and then the rest of the crew got here about 5 o'clock and did the heavy lifting.
Wow. So you've been doing, more than 5 hours. 5 hours today, but you must have put in, dozens of hours getting this stuff, parts, going out there, finding you couldn't, the parts didn't work.
Rub it in, Robert. Just rub it in.
Not at all. What I'm saying is that the amount of energy you put in indicates, I guess it does indicate a certain feebleness of mind.
If I got paid for this job, Robert, if I got paid for this job, you couldn't afford
it. I have no doubt. In fact, perhaps we can't afford you even though you aren't paid for this job. But that's another story, I guess.
That's another story. Anyway, we got to clean up our mess here and get the flock out of Dodge.
Congratulations, Dennis. My thanks to you and all the people doing it. And
includes the host of the Art Duck Show, Mr. John Malcolm. His show is on Wednesday night. Art Duck, of course, on Friday night. We also had Apeski was here. Apeski. Carl Reef was here, and let's see, who else? Was that it? Was that the crew? Yeah.
You know, you're making things very easy for the DA and the federal prosecutors, but I commend you for that.
Apeski is an alias. It's Apeski. Now, John Malcolm chooses to use his real name.
Oh, dear. Well, that's the nonviolence guy, right?
And then, of course, you use your nom de radio.
Nom de blah.
Nom de guerre.
Something like that, yeah. Well, very good, Dennis, and I'm sorry you won't be coming in tonight because I know you do a lot of original shows when you come in, and,
I will be back next week, and the engineering crew will get to work on the 100-watt transmitter, and we'll get that back on the air.
In the meantime, we will try to shout louder
hours at least.
All right, a couple more hours.
If you know a meth dealer...
We'll leave that to you, Uncle Dennis. Thank you, and keep the home wires burning, so to speak.
That might have been the wrong one. Yeah.
Take care, man.
Take care, Robert.
And that certainly is good news. Apparently, Free Radio Santa Cruz is back, 101.3 FM, assuming we're not being drowned out by some Christian fundamentalist rock, which I hope we're not. Welcome back to Free Radio. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the last 18 minutes of the show. After which we'll be playing some tired old replay of Cream to the Dregs. But, certainly a salute to Uncle Dennis and the dozens of hours, it really is, that he's put in trying to get this station back together on the air. And an apology is that we're only at a limited 18 watts, which is less than a fifth of our usual strength. So you got to kind of go downtown to hear us, I guess. Or unless you're, of course, going to... tune in. If you Google in your browser for tune in, and then you put FRSC into the tune in website, it's not tune in isn't the full name, but that's where you can kind of go to find it, and then you'll be able to catch the stream of Free Radio where most of us have been listening for the last. I guess everybody, if anybody wants to hear it, has been listening for the last three or four weeks, if not longer. I don't know how long it's been since we've been off the air, but it's been quite a while. So I'm going to now go back to this interview, which I began, but was interrupted by the good news. If you've got some good news to interrupt or bad news, I don't care. News, you can call in 427-3772. I really had hoped for a call from Mark Schwartz, who's an activist who came to town with Rocky Anderson, the presidential candidate, who observed with kind of some shock the behavior of post office authorities trying to shut down, occupy Santa Cruz's public meeting on the steps of the post office. I guess it was one Saturday afternoon, or maybe it was a Sunday, Saturday or Sunday. And it was, he was going to give me a report on the anti-sitting law up in San Francisco, where he has been cited and will be going to court next month in a test case. It looks like he didn't get to in on the lines one way or the other. So I'll try to get him to call back on Sunday, ditto with perhaps the activist from Ashland, who got a citation for sleeping, who was mentioned earlier by Eric, the city council member, but I didn't quite get the second call that I thought was coming in at 6 o'clock. Anyway, let's hear more from Casey Livengood, who is an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz, a Food Not Bombs activist, and a Huff activist, as well as being activists in any other number of organizations. The man is exhausting to even consider, but let's hear some more.
With Casey Livengood here, right across from the Sub Rosa. Casey, you had a special assignment. You went out to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call them today. Today is Wednesday the 30th. What was your objective out there?
To document any changes in policy or any changes, really, at the Homeless Services Center due to a new administration. And
interested also in disabilities and discrimination?
Yeah, I was also interested in if there were sufficient accommodations for folks with disabilities, and also if there was an increase in discrimination within the past month or two.
And you told me you weren't able to bring along clipboards, so you actually made the perhaps fatal error of going into the office and talking to a fellow named Dan in search of clipboards?
Ken, I think.
Ken, sorry.
I think that was. But
yeah, Dan is the old guy, I guess, is no longer with us.
Yeah. Oh, and he said that we needed permission to be on campus or to survey on campus, to conduct a survey on campus, and because it's private property. And
this wasn't the case before when you came on campus, however, right? I mean, you didn't. We were Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group you were working with. Although I guess you didn't initially. You said you were with Huff, but then he looked up Huff and he made a comment about it.
Said they had bad history with the HSE.
Can you specify what he meant by that?
I asked like bad. I was like bad history. Trying to remember I forgot what he said.
He wasn't very specific, or you just don't remember?
He wasn't very specific.
And what else did he tell you?
I waited for like 15 minutes for him to, you know, go ask permission about the if I can conduct a survey, but neither Alyssa or Monica or any of his superiors supposedly were there.
About what time was it?
About 3:15.
And you've been doing this several times before. I know I was there with you on a couple of occasions, and I don't recall there being any incidents of any kind. We surveyed numerous people. They came out and talked to us. We interviewed them. We were on the property. We even had a table on the property, right?
Yeah, that was more guerrilla. We didn't go in and ask them. We just went ahead and did it.
And they knew we were there, and they didn't object.
They did object in a way. And then I kind of stalled them, and then we...
Well, we were there for an hour. I think if they'd wanted to object, they were walking back and forth and so forth.
Yeah, I guess if they wanted to call the police...
This is a few months before.
Yeah, but I don't think they really wanted to make a spectacle of the situation.
So were you able to ask any questions? It sounds like it's unusual. I'd heard rumors they were tightening up their policies with respect to clients, with respect to the public, excluding them, excluding homeless activists. That's something I hadn't heard recently happening.
I asked the guy at the front specifically if there was any new policies due to the new administration, and he said there wasn't. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's only one person's opinion.
Yeah, he was telling you couldn't table. You couldn't even walk around with a survey. Did he ask you to leave?
He didn't ask me to leave. He just asked me not to conduct any surveys.
Don't ask any questions of our clients?
Exactly.
And did you follow orders or did you disobey the high command?
I followed orders and I talked to people just outside the camp HSC.
Go ahead. What did you learn?
People with disabilities at the Poly Loft have a hard time because they're on the lower level.
With Casey Living Good still beyond his 2-minute period, looks like it has gotten into a 5-minute interview, Casey. Shockingly enough. So, how many people did you talk to?
I talked to 4 people personally, and Tom talked to 1.
Anybody's talked about being excluded, or were they generally favorable? What was their general feeling?
There was one person who the first 3 were very. Actually, the first one I didn't read. So the 2 of them I know were pretty favorable of the new administration. So they were nicer, like tried to make people happier or tried harder.
Anything specific?
No, not really. And then one person said that the new administration was worse. And I still got to read the other survey. But
so it was sort of a small sample. Were people reluctant to talk to you? Were they eager to talk to you? Was it sort of indifferent to you?
Well, there weren't many people surrounding the homeless service center, and I was hungry, so I went and got food.
And did you get a meal there?
Yeah, it was nice.
Chat with your fellow dinner companions?
Companion, Tom.
So you kind of sat alone inside? Isn't there a kind of a large communal dining hall where this happened?
Yeah. I wanted to eat, so I didn't try to conduct any survey.
You missed your chance to catch people at their most vulnerable as they were eating with their guard down.
Yeah, and so I figured I'd go back later and try again.
And so you're thinking of a return visit to the homeless lack of services center?
Yeah, I think so, at some point. I still have 25 surveys left. So.
Hey, yes, indeed. You talked about that survey at the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting today. Anything else from the streets or thereabouts or upcoming events you want to announce?
No.
Thank you. We've been talking with?
Casey.
Thanks, Casey.
And that, of course, was a very brief and, you know, kind of just touching the waters. But what it told me about Casey's trip out there day before yesterday, actually it was yesterday, to the homeless lack of services center, was not only it's a lack of services center, now it's a lack of transparency and its desire to wall off the center from any and sort of isolate clients from any discussion of what is actually happening out there that might be critical of the homeless lack of services center. Some of this is paranoia or apprehension or legitimate concern that news media may be exploiting the murder of the camouflage owner, probably by a guy who stayed there for a couple of nights, and that somehow means that there's, you know, they're incriminated. I mean, he plotted to kill her there, perhaps. Obviously not, but, you know, this is sort of wild. I call it the bloody bra strategy that's being used to prey on people's fears to push agendas like the Take Back Santa Cruz is pushing. But it's interesting to learn that they're now trying to exclude people asking questions about how people feel about the homeless lack of services center. Of course, Casey is your sort of archetypical nice guy. I mean, he spent a lot of time trying to make friends with Ryan Coonerty when Coonerty was mayor, or he's still in office. But when the rest of us had realized that Coonerty was simply not interested in discussions, Casey was willing to try to go ahead and spend some time on making a pal of the guy who's proposed anti-homeless measure after anti-homeless measure. A couple of articles from the paper in the remaining 6 or 7 minutes, and I'm hoping to have, by the way, on Sunday, if you come back, some reports from the Homeless Lack of Services Center by a disabled woman, Andrea, who was last night threatened that she had to leave if she given a trespass ticket because she was sleeping on the edge of the property for safety. She claimed someone had been raped there outside the property, beyond the fence. She wanted to be on the property. She also has a walker, according to her account. And the lot manager threatened to call the police on her. Our homeless legal services person, that's the Homeless Persons Legal Project, Steve Plaich, apparently recommended that she have the police come and point out to them that this was the safest place she could be. And it would be really unlikely that the Homeless Lack of Service Center would actually try to have her arrested for trespass, which of course, they have done that in the past, like a decade ago. There, a guy kept sleeping on the porch of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, again, because they have no room. They posture and masquerade as a homeless services center, but the most basic service they don't provide, and they don't advocate that police stop harassing people who are simply trying to provide it for themselves by camping outside where they must, or sleeping at night. So she may be on the air on Sunday, and that's a possibility. As I said, Mark Schwartz may be on the air talking about the measure, the sit-lie law challenge up in San Francisco. They have a sit-lie law, which was inspired by our nasty sitting ban law here in Santa Cruz. Again, clear the streets of the poor and homeless so that the merchants can pretend that the things are rosier for tourists walking by. Again, I think a somewhat self-deluded approach. I was looking at the couple of stories which maybe you saw in the Sentinel. One of them is about a lawsuit. Judge says Santa Cruz neighborhood group didn't harass woman civil suit filed against Garfield neighbors tossed. And it's sort of I kind of drew my attention because I noticed this is apparently a lawsuit by Santa Cruz resident Julie Ann Scholl, who claimed that Dan Rowland and the Garfield Neighbors Group, of which he's a leader, harassed her and her two sons. Garfield Neighbors is an affiliate of Santa Cruz Neighbors, focusing on so-called public safety issues in the neighborhood. Members work with business owners, city officials, the police department, and other community groups like Take Back Santa Cruz. We're a group of neighbors concerned about criminal activity in the area, said Rowland, who also sits on a number of local boards. At a hearing Wednesday, Scholl, the woman who filed the lawsuit against Rowland and these community, essentially vigilante, it looks like to me, anti-homeless groups, that's been my impression, but again, I don't know the particular facts of this, argued that the group had posted photos of her vehicle on their Facebook page and made derogatory comments in emails and group newsletters. Her suit also accused the group of tampering with the group with her RV, taking videos and yelling at her. She and her sons were living in the RV at the time. Rowland said the community be concerned about illegal camping in the neighborhood, particularly in the area of the Circle Church, which, by the way, is a church where homeless people, at least two vehicles of them, are allowed to camp at night under the one of the few exceptions to the city's anti-homeless sleeping and blanket and camping bans, as well as the suspected drug use going on there. He told Volkman that he sometimes circles the area in his car, but that any observations are conducted from a global perspective and isn't targeting individuals or focusing on Scholl. Rowland rebutted Scholl's claims that he followed her, stalked her, or otherwise harassed her. He also said he didn't personally post the images on Facebook, nor had he encouraged anyone else to, and he had never met Scholl before. Volkman told Scholl that she failed to show Roland was involved in unlawful violence or presented a threat of violence. She also didn't show that the group's activities caused her substantial emotional distress, Volkman said before ruling in Roland's favor. He denied any request by Scholl for injunctive relief, but also denied a request by Roland's attorney, Nathan Benjamin, asking that Scholl be ordered to pay his attorney's fees. Though he disagreed with that part, Benjamin said he thought Volkman made the right ruling in dismissing the harassment allegations. It seems to me there is probably no doubt that this person is being harassed, and it's no doubt that this guy is involved in neighborhood organizations that apparently support this kind of thing. At least there's no indication that he opposes it in this story, but there's not enough proof to show that he's personally involved. But it is a good sign to me that some people are standing up and going to court, although a bad sign that Volkman is not taking more action, at least to make it clear to these neighborhood groups that this is not appropriate behavior and that if links can be made, that there will be harassment injunctions and or criminal charges looked at. Although it's not really criminal charges we're talking, it sounds like a civil injunction. Another article, officials temporarily reinstate homeless camp cleanup San Jose. This also from the Santa Cruz Sentinel. This is Friday of May 18th. 2 weeks ago, the other article I just read to you was from today's Sentinel in the second section. Judge says neighborhood Santa Cruz neighborhood group didn't harass woman civil suit filed against Garfield neighbor Toss. That is by Jessica M. Pasco. Thank you, Jessica, for what coverage you did of that. I'm supposed to say that because I'm apparently being too hard on poor Jessica, whose coverage I wasn't too happy with for the Santa Cruz 11. And by the way, again, I remind you, that's coming up tomorrow. If you want to check us out, there'll be seven of us all lined up in our jailhouse finest. Actually, we'll just be coming whatever we're to court at 8:15 in front of Department 6 or 7, which are right next to each other inside the courthouse. It's a hearing to give an attorney to one of the seven, Brent Adams, the 11 actually, but the seven who are left, who actually may be doing some work for Adams instead of denouncing him and ignoring him and hanging up on him and abusing him, which seems to be the kind of stuff that Brian Murphy, at least, was doing according to Brent Adams. Adams tried to get rid of him. The judge would not do it. Finally, Murphy himself got embarrassed enough to step away, and a new attorney, J.J. Hamlin, is being appointed for Brent Adams. Again, this is in the cases of the funny felony cases that 11 of us are charged with for reporting on, occupying, supporting, being around a bank for 4 days on and off, actually one day for many people, and not even in the bank for one, who are trying to be supportive of a community center there, supportive of exposing Wells Fargo's predatory activities in the Santa Cruz community. And, of course, what this really exposes is the depth of the power of local authorities to punish even peaceful protest. So, I think I may bring this article back and read it on Sunday when I come back at 9:30. It's about an increase in attacks on homeless camps in San Jose. Again, there's really nothing novel or terribly anything more than a dog bites man-ish about this kind of a story. But I like to keep tabs on the kind of abuses that are happening because they are abuses. And they're as vicious and as dangerous and maybe ultimately as deadly as any individual murder that we have seen preoccupying the city council and the newspapers and the media for weeks in the case of the camouflage owner murder. Because these kinds of attacks on homeless people are persistent and cause actually more deaths than the random killing that tends to happen in our society with some regularity as the pressures mount. Anyway, that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I want to thank folks for listening in the last, 18 minutes. We've been back on the air. You want to catch the show, it's archived at huffsantacruz.org on the website. I encourage you to do that. Also to listen to some of our past shows, which if you haven't heard them, they're thrilling, they're exciting, they're sometimes tedious, but I think they're pretty informative. Check them out, again, on the Huff website. And I'll be back on Sunday, be in court tomorrow. Let's talk, let's meet, support the Santa Cruz 11. Go to their website, santacruz11.org, to get more information. And let's hear now from the much beloved Uncle Dennis and see if we can